Welcome to the Viking Age Podcast, part of the Fansided Podcast Network. Now, please welcome your host, Adam Patrick.
All right, welcome to the Viking Age Podcast, the official podcast for thevikingage.com. I'm your host, Adam Patrick. I'm the editor and lead writer for the Viking Age. Before we get started today, make sure to follow The Viking Age on Twitter and Facebook. The site's username on Twitter is @TheVikingAge, and you can follow the site's Facebook page by heading to facebook.com/TheVikingAge. All right, joining the show today is Chris Shad. He's been writing for us here at The Viking Age for quite a while, and he's been on the podcast multiple times in the past. So just welcome back to the show, Chris.
Adam, what's going on, man? How are you enjoying the off season?
It's pretty good. I mean, better than last year. I feel like there's a lot more stuff going on because, you know, people are actually practicing and stuff. So there's more, definitely more to talk about, especially with the Vikings making this move recently. So most recently, the Vikings made the decision last Thursday to trade cornerback Mike Hughes to the Kansas City Chiefs in exchange for a 2022 six-round pick, a big haul they got for him. After the Vikings drafted him in the first round in 2018, he was only lasted 3 years with the team before they traded him last week. So what was your reaction when you first learned about the Vikings trading Mike Hughes to the Chiefs last week?
My eyebrows went up because I didn't think they'd actually trade him. I think if they got rid of him, they would have cut him after training camp. I was more surprised that they did not bring him into offseason activities, training camp, etc., to see how that neck was testing out. They're going to know more than we will about the type of injury that Hughes suffered, the broken neck or whatever it was. Mm-hmm. But I think that the way the Vikings depth chart is set up, there's still question marks throughout the secondary. I mean, Patrick Peterson, he's a name, but he's declined in each of the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. Cameron Dantzler had some good games, but he had his own injury issues. Then you have Mackenzie Alexander. You have Chris Boyd. One more guy, Harrison Hand. Yep. You know, all of those guys are going to compete for a cornerback spot. And I don't know. I mean, maybe it's just kind of wanting to see a first round pick turn out. But I don't think Mike Hughes was ever going to turn into the shutdown cornerback the Vikings expected when they took him in the first round in 2018.
Yeah. And it looked at first like he was going to be a good pick. He had that pick six in his first game. And then, you know, he had some other good moments after that. And Mike Zimmer was raving about him in his first training camp and how he's able to pick up the defense, you know, quicker than most rookies. And then he tore his ACL, and I don't think he's ever been the same since. And I think Mike Zimmer kind of alluded to that the other day when he spoke and said that kind of just hasn't been the same since his injuries, and they've kind of held him back. And so, you know, they just wanted to see. It did seem like they were gonna probably cut him before the season. Which is, you know, kind of obvious when you're okay with getting a six round pick back for a guy you drafted in the first round a couple years ago. But yeah, just injuries, I think, just had a big impact on him. And I'll be interested to see if he actually makes the Chiefs roster, because with them giving up a six round pick, there's no guarantee that he's even on their roster either. I've had some Chiefs people ask me, you know, what should we know about Mike Hughes? And I'm like, there isn't really a whole lot to know or that I can tell you, because like he hasn't been on the field, and when he has, he hasn't been that great. Because I think you could look at his second year as kind of being his rookie year, because he was only on the field for like 5.5 games his first year.
Yeah, and I think there's two things I'll remember about Mike Hughes. Is one, the pick six against San Francisco, which I think was on a broken coverage, if I don't remember. I'm not trying to discredit it, because I can never make an interception, let alone return for a touchdown in the National Football League. But the other one is Amari Cooper just taking his soul on national television. And you watch that game and you're kind of like, I don't know, this is his first start and I don't really know what to expect from him. Yep. But it wasn't a good sign in his overall development. Like you said, tearing his ACL and then backing that up with a broken neck. I mean, those are two pretty serious injuries to come back from. And I don't think we'll ever sit here and go like, oh God, if we only didn't trade Mike Hughes to Kansas City, blah, blah, blah. like, I think that, you know, just something that panned out. And that's what you see with first round picks sometimes with any team. Sometimes it's not the player. It's just a slew of injuries that holds a guy back.
Yeah. And you look at it and the Vikings going into that 2018 draft, a lot of people were like, they should, you know, be picking an interior offensive lineman, you know, sound familiar. But they went with a corner and we were all like, okay, well, whatever. Maybe Xavier Rhodes is getting older, I guess. And Trey Waynes is maybe on his way out. So it was kind of interesting just to see that they did that. And in the end, didn't work out. I don't know where some of the guys they passed on are right now, as far as like Will Hernandez and some of the other guys. Well, what do you got on him?
So I'm looking right now at some of the guys that they passed up. Obviously, you have Lamar Jackson, two picks after Mike Hughes, but they just, I mean, I've written articles about it. Like, man, maybe they should have done that, because like the Seahawks signed Matt Flynn to that big free agent deal, and then they drafted Russell Wilson, but Russell Wilson was a third round pick.
Yeah.
And, you know, to take your quarterback there, like the Vikings wound up doing, like, it's not a big deal if he flames out. But you also had other guys. I mean, you had Austin Corbett. I don't know where he is. Will Hernandez has been up and down. Yep. Nick Chubb. Darius Leonard would have been a good pick.
Yeah.
You got Cortland Sutton, who might explode if Aaron Rodgers goes to Denver. Yep. There's some interesting names here that I'm looking up. PJ Hall is on that list. passed on him. So, yeah. DJ Chark, there's another one. But yeah, all the offensive linemen. I mean, I'm not mad that the Vikings took Mike Hughes over them. I mean, they got Brian O'Neill at pick 62. But
that's true, yeah.
I mean, it's just unfortunate.
Yeah, I don't think they would have drafted Lamar Jackson, because they just signed Kirk Cousins to that massive deal and committed all that money to him. I think the owners would have been like, what are you guys doing?
Well, Mike Zimmer's an old school coach, too. I mean, he's probably not a fan of the whole zone read, run option quarterback. I assume he had to have some talking to before they drafted, I was going to call him Christian Kirk, same school, Kellen Mond out of Texas A&M. I think that Zimmer's just, you know, pocket passer, run the ball. I don't think he was on board with Cousins, but I don't think he would have been on board with taking Lamar Jackson after paying Cousins either.
Right. Well, you know, if he knew that Lamar Jackson would run for 1,000 yards, you know, pretty much every year, I don't think he would mind, because he likes to run the ball a little bit. All right, so I don't think we mentioned this guy, but with Jeff Gladney's status for next season still uncertain, and then, you know, you factor in just trading Mike Hughes, do you think the Vikings should add another veteran corner to their roster before training camp, or should they just roll with the other corners they have on their roster? You mentioned Harrison Hand and Chris Boyd, some of those guys.
I think they should add one. I'm not sure who that cornerback is. I know Brashad Breeland is out there. Yep. Maybe there's another guy that can compete with that 4 or 5 spot.
Roby Coleman's out there too, I think.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be too mad if they sign him to compete with Mackenzie Alexander. Because Mack was really good. I think it was in 2018, especially towards the tail end. 2019, he got a little bit banged up. I mean, there's a lot of positions on this team, cornerback included, that if there's one injury, you're screwed. You're playing the Chris Jones of the NFL again. Mm-hmm. And I think that adding a corner would be a great way to kind of prevent that. And the Vikings have the cap room now. They're going to get about, $8 million on June 1st from the Rudolph cut. So, yeah, they can go out and make a move. I think they absolutely should sign one more cornerback.
Yeah, look into that and maybe see if they can add a receiver too, since they waited to the 5th round to add a receiver in the draft this year. It's not like there wasn't anyone available before then. Speaking of rookies, Vikings rookie minicamp took place this weekend, so we got our first look at some of the team's top draft picks in purple, including Christian Darrisaw. You mentioned Kellen Mond and Wyatt Davis, but on Mond, I don't think I've had you on since the Vikings drafted him. So what was just your reaction after Minnesota drafted him in the 3rd round?
I was very mad that it wasn't Justin Fields.
Oh, yeah.
You know, here's the thing with Justin. Like, I went into, 2 days before the draft, I'm just like, nah, there's no way they get Justin Fields. Somebody's going to, because I remember Tua Tagovailoa the year before, And everybody's like, oh, his hip, he's going to fall in the late 20s and like the Vikings should snatch him. And he went like fourth. So this Fields thing, I'm like, okay, these are just smoke screens.
He's like the Mac Jones thing when they're like, he can be number three.
Yeah, he's going to get taken at four or five and then everybody's going to get on with their life. And then he started falling and he got past Carolina. And once that happened, I'm like, oh my God, like you got to trade up, Rick. And I was like, trade up. And eventually the Bears are the team that trades up. And I think the fact that the Bears traded up for Fields was just like the ultimate gut punch. Like they could have taken, like I said, the Justin Jefferson of the offensive line, and they might have it in Christian Darrisaw, who knows? But I mean, they could have taken Randy Moss, and I still would have been pissed off they didn't trade for Justin Fields. I mean, that's maybe exaggeration, but I mean, I was just that depressed. So to go into the third round, wait for that developmental prospect like Kellen Mond, it's almost like when you want to go to McDonald's as a kid, and like, hey, can we go to McDonald's? No, we got food at home. No, can we get Justin Fields? No, we got Kellen Mond at home. Like, it just feels like Kellen Mond is a less polished passer than Justin Fields. I think his mobility is about the same, but I think that, you know, it's just, it's one of those things. I'm not going to know what Kellen Mond is for another couple of years. Right. And if he's good, great. If he's not, well, you wasted a third round pick on him. It's not a big deal because you have like four of them. So.
Support for the Viking Age podcast is brought to you today by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. They obsess over their technology developments to provide you with the best tools for your grooming experience. Manscaped is trusted by over 2 million men worldwide. We have an exclusive offer for our listeners, which is 20% off and free shipping with the code FANSIDED20 at manscaped.com. Manscaped has created the best ball hair trimmer ever, the Lawnmower 3.0. Their third generation trimmer features a cutting edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents thanks to their advanced skin safe technology. In addition, this trimmer comes with an LED light for a more precise shave and is waterproof to make your shower shave clean and dry. So once again, get 20% off and free shipping with the code FANSIDED20 at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use the code FANSIDED20. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tools for the job with Manscaped. Well, you mentioned you went to the Bears, so if you went to a team like maybe like the Titans, would it have been, you think you would have reacted the same way? Or just because he's going to be in the Vikings division now, you're going to see him twice a year if he, you know, whenever he becomes a starter.
I think the disappointment would have been the same. It's just the added insult to injury, not that now we have to figure out how to stop him. And if he's good, which I think he'll be, that's a problem. So,
well, the Vikings, you know, as much as they've made trades with Rick Spielman and control of the draft, they've never traded their top pick to move up. It's always either been they stayed in place or they moved back. So I wasn't too surprised when, you know, I know they did make calls. They to trade up for Slater. They tried to move up before the Chargers. And then, you know, but I don't think they tried to trade up to get Fields. And then they might have called to see what the asking price would have been. And obviously that was too much. I think the Bears gave up a first round next year as well, in addition to their first round this year. So, and then, you know, you factor in the Bears, their quarterback issues. I'm not so sold on Justin Fields, because if a team like the Bears thinks he's worth trading up for, I mean, they traded up for Mitchell Trubisky a couple years ago. So, you know, maybe they hit it on this one, but at the same time, I'm like, and they also traded for Nick Foles. They just signed Andy Dalton, so I'm not so sold on their evaluations as far as quarterbacks go.
The Bears, I mean, they were so desperate at that point. They would have traded up for, I don't know. Like, I'm trying to think of a bad cut. Like, would have traded up for Ryan Leaf.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I'm all about the exaggerations today, apparently. But it's, I think Ryan Pace was sitting there in his office going, holy bleep, I need to get a quarterback come hell or high water. like he was going to throw the whole farm. Like the Giants could have sat there and be like, no, we want like four firsts and like, yeah, yeah, whatever, whatever. My job's on the line. I can't start Andy Dalton. I know social media posts and whatever. So yeah, QB one, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So do you think Minnesota's current plan is to make Kellen Mond the starter in 2022, or do you think maybe they'll take more of a wait and see approach with him? So basically, will the way that Kirk Cousins performs next season have any impact on their plans for Mond?
I think Mond, the soonest he'll hit the field is 2022, but I don't think it'll be at the beginning of the season unless if Cousins just has this season where we're just like, what are you doing? Like, for all the bad moments that Kirk Cousins had last year, there were, what are you doing? But I mean, he still had good stats. He had
first 4,000 yards,
35. Yeah, I know those first six games. Like, if he comes out and has the same stretch like he had in the first six games, they might throw Kellen Mond in there.
Yeah, people wanted to bench him for Sean Mannion last year, and that's how bad it got.
Yeah, yeah, especially the Atlanta game. They're like, well, you have nothing else. You can't throw Mannion in there. Yeah. Now they have a legitimate thing, unless if Kellen Mond looks like Jordan Love.
Right.
Like, I don't know. I just don't see this working out, to be honest with you. And I would love to be wrong. If the Vikings got a franchise quarterback in round three, like, hell yeah. But I also think that the likelihood of a third round quarterback turning into a franchise god is slim to none. And would the Vikings go another year? Like, next year's quarterback class doesn't look too good with Sam Howell and Keaton Slovis. None of those guys really move the needle for me. I mean, I'm dancing around your question because I don't know. I don't know about it. Like, I don't know how Kellen Mond's going to turn out because he needs that much development right now. I was playing NCAA 14, which has the college football revamp thing. It's awesome. And one of the things that they do is they have little like cut-ups. So like while you're loading games and stuff, and they have Kellen Mond and his elbows are like this.
Yeah,
like the guy is so damn robotic that it's just like, they got to tell him, hey, man, loosen up a little bit. Like, don't focus on so many of these things, because if you play like yourself, you'll probably succeed. Like, we're seeing that a little bit. But it's just like, okay, five-step drop, then a pump fake and all this stuff. And I think he really just overthinks things on the field. It's kind of
reminds me of if you ever saw Aaron Rodgers when he was at Cal. He had a very robotic kind of, you know, passing stance, and his elbows were all like that too, where he just held the ball in the same place every time. And then, you know, obviously he had a couple of years to sit in Green Bay, and that got way better, and he got to just be more natural with the ball, and that turned out to be a pretty good outcome. So with the additions of Christian Darrisaw and Wyatt Davis in this year's draft, what are your expectations for the Vikings offensive line next season?
I'm excited about them.
Weird.
Actually,
that's weird.
Yeah, it's a different feeling. Like, the biggest thing that I like about this offensive line going into training camp is that they seem solidified in their positions. Like, we've gone into training camp the last couple of years, like, well, Brian O'Neill's at right tackle, but they might move him to left tackle. Yep. Or, you know, Ezra Cleveland's a tackle, but they might make him a guard. Like, you know what everybody is, and you know where they're going to be playing. They put Wyatt Davis at his natural position at right guard, and Zimmer came out yesterday during his rookie minicamp. He's like, we might play him all over the place. It's not going to be for long. Like, they'll probably just be like, okay, Ezra played on the left side in college. Wyatt played on the right side in college. Why mess it up? And then you also have guys that are entrenched in Brian O'Neill at right tackle, Garrett Bradbury at center. And Darrisaw, you know, once I calm down over the overall disappointment of missing out on Fields, Darrisaw is one hell of a prospect. Mm-hmm. I mean, he is great in the running game, needs a little bit of work in the passing game, but he didn't allow a sack last season.
Yep.
I think that is a home run pick by the Vikings. And I love Wyatt Davis. He just looks like a pro caliber guard. Mm-hmm. And when he is healthy, I mean, even last year at Ohio State, he wasn't bad. I mean, he had his moments, but he wasn't awful.
It's two-time All-American.
Yeah, if he's good with his, well, we got to be careful with that because Drew Samia was also, he was part of the best offensive line in college football, and then they threw him in.
He was part of it, but he wasn't an All-American, was he? I don't think he was.
I think he was.
No.
I think he was.
No way.
You look it up, what I'm saying here is like he's such Davis is so good in pass protection that guys just don't get moved, and he doesn't get moved often. I think that's been the biggest problem with the offensive line. So we've had guys on the ground, you know, Garrett Bradbury had the picture of him looking like he just won a game of Flip Cup on the ground, you know, without both his arms in the air. Like, I really like the Davis pick, and I think Darisaw will be good on the edge as well.
All right, so Drew Samia was a second-team All-American in 2018.
Okay.
He was the Big 12.
Still hard to do.
Yeah, Big 12 co-offensive lineman of the year in 2018. First-team All-Big 12. So Big 12, you know, all right. But I'm more happier with Wyatt Davis being a two-time first-team All-American, especially do it 2 years in a row. Especially to do it in the season where he only played, what, 6 games last year? And you're still getting the All-American stuff. A lot of people were just surprised that he fell to the third round. I think most people expected him to be off the board by the time he actually came off. I'm excited about this offensive line. You mentioned Brian O'Neill. I think an underrated part of the Christian Darisaw pick is when they give Brian O'Neill an extension now, they don't have to pay him left tackle money. Because he's going to stay at Wright Davis. So that saves them a bunch of money. And that's kind of an underrated part of this Darisaw pick because he was being considered, you know, moving to left tackle. And then he's going to be like, oh, cool. So I get more money now, right? Because I'm going to be on the left tackle because that's the premier spot for most offensive linemen. So that's a big thing about this pick about Christian Darisaw that I think is underrated. And if Darisaw works out, then it's even better. And I think he's got a good chance. I would expect him to start right away because who else can start there? Like Rashad Hill. And then I've heard things about like they might start Dakota Dozier to begin the year. And I'm like, no, don't stop. Don't do that. like what? There's not gonna be any difference between him and Wyatt Davis screwing up a couple times if he plays out there as a rookie. Like,
and I think too, getting two decent guards next to Garrett Bradbury will make him better.
Yeah, I saw someone call him a bust the other day after 2 years. I was like, 2 years? Come on. Like, did we call Aaron Rodgers a bust after his first couple of years when he was not that good?
I would say disappointing, but not a bust.
Oh, for sure.
I think, you know, when he came into the league, it was, yeah, this is a rock solid plug-and-play guard, 10 years, Mark Schlereth out there throwing garbage.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
So, I think we just underestimate how much the performance of offensive linemen also depends on the guys next to them. Because you look at Riley Reiff and how he struggled, and that was when Pat Elflein was next to him. You take Pat Elflein out of there, and Riley Reiff's like, oh, I'm pretty good again. So
that's weird because it was Dakota Dozier next to him.
Yeah, maybe Dozier's a better run blocker than Elflein was because Elflein he didn't do a whole lot, right? I mean, I know he got a job. He's with the Panthers now, I think.
Yeah.
You know, because they like to sign terrible former Vikings offensive linemen. Shout out to Matt Khalil. So it'll be interesting to see. Let's move on to this thing right here. Adam Thielen caused some Packers fans to whine a little bit last week when he, dissed their sacred palace of Lambeau Field after he said it was his favorite place to play. That part doesn't get played around his comments afterwards where he said it's not fancy and there's bleacher seating. So my question to you is, have you been to Lambeau? And if you have, what's your opinion of the stadium?
I have not been inside Lambeau Field. Oh, okay, I haven't gone to a game there. But when we were in college, River Falls actually played St. Norbert, which is in De Pere, which is like a suburb of Green Bay. I mean, there's not really suburbs, but it's right there. So we stayed in Green Bay. And I was like, you know, young idiot college guy, I'm like, I'm going to pee on the side of the stadium. And I got out there and like, hey, it's really well lit, obviously, because it's like a public building. Like,
yeah.
I'm an idiot. And B, There's cameras everywhere. Oh, so, yeah. I mean, that went out. And the other reason was it's really cool from the outside.
Yeah.
Like, looking at it that way, it's got the brick. Like, you can kind of see the aura or whatever on the yep. outside. I mean, I really want to go to a game at Lambeau Field, but some of the stories about the Packer fans inside of Lambeau Field kind of rubbed a little bit of luster off, and like the bleacher seat. I've been to so many high school games. I don't care about backs on seats. Like, TCF Bank is awesome, and it has bleacher seats too. Like, mm-hmm. I like going to games there. You know, it is what it is. It's an older stadium. It's a little bit worn down. A lot of the adjustments were made so the beautiful people can get their suites and their clubs and everything else.
Wait, like there's
the
beautiful atrium. People in Green Bay?
I know. I thought of that as soon as I said that. But, you know, I mean, some people are richer than others over there. I mean, I would love to go see a game at Green Bay. Do I want to do it this year when they're going to play in Week 17 at night? I'm not so sure about it. Like, I went to the Blair Walsh game. The shank at the bank. Whew. And the good thing about that was my seat was in the sun.
There you go.
So, I mean, me being bundled up as I was, it wasn't too bad. But, I mean, those people in the shade, I was just like, oh, my God, that would be it'd be horrible. And then, of course, the way that game ended, that wouldn't be much fun. But, yeah, I mean, a night game, that'd be a little chilly. But I can't talk about the inside, but the outside looks absolutely awesome.
The cold didn't seem to bother Bud Grant that day, though, in TCF. What's the worst stadium you've ever been to?
Well, it's technically a football stadium, but I went to a baseball game there. Oakland Coliseum.
Mm-hmm.
I went there for an A's game, mm-hmm. and like I wound up going there thinking, okay, I remember the Metrodome. It can't be worse than the Metrodome, right? And it was, because you had... We had seats along the third baseline, and the seat of my friend's seat, actually, the actual seat part was like crooked, and then it was like jarred to the outfield. So everything else was pointing towards home plate, and like the little armrest was like broken off. And we think it was like used as a shank during a Raiders game or something.
Sure.
And, you know, we went up to this like club area, you know, like Target Field, they got the bar out in left field, or even like Petco Park, they have those open drinking areas. In Oakland, it's like a closet, man. You go in this closet, there's a couple of TVs, and you know, they put a couple of nice things in there, but it's just a dump. And this guy's talking to us, and he's like, man, this place is a dump, but it's our dump. And you know, it used to be a really nice stadium before the Raiders moved back, and they added all of those like luxury seats and foldable and everything else and closed it in. But yeah, it is definitely rough over in Oakland. How about you?
They're trying. Well, first on that, I think they're trying to get a new stadium in Oakland for the A's. And and baseball is like, if you don't get it, then you can leave, because
yeah.
the stadium you're in, yeah, like you said, it's a dump. For me, before I moved out to San Diego, it's probably the Bills Stadium. It's pretty rough in there. It's pretty old. I think it was built in like the 70s. You know, they've done some renovations or whatever, but it's still, you can tell it was built a long time ago. Like, just what are those things called? And like the hallways and stadiums, like those are just
concourses.
Yeah. It's just like cement everywhere. And you can always tell when that's there, that this just like an old stadium. I would say the Chargers' old stadium, Qualcomm, or Joe Robbie is
Miami.
What's the old Chargers stadium called before? I can't remember. But it was
Qualcomm. Yeah.
It was Qualcomm, but it had something else because the Padres played there. Let's see. But it was bad. I went there for a preseason game when like I first moved there. Oh, Jack Murphy. Jack Murphy Stadium. They had a bunch of Super Bowls there before in the past, but like just when I moved, it was like 2016, 2017 when the Chargers were just like really just like, all right, we're going to leave. So they just like gave up on maintaining the whole stadium. There was like the TVs they had in there were like from like the 80s. The scoreboard was like smaller than the TV I have in my house. There was like one working ATM in the whole place. Just like it was just not the greatest stadium you could have been to.
I really think it's a California thing, because my friend did the whole like drive all the way up California to see all the baseball stadiums. And he said, like, I was like, oh, well, how is Dodger Stadium? He's like, oh, it's a dump. Like, they don't take care of it. Yeah. Like, I swear it's a Cal, because like Oakland, it was the same thing. I'm sitting there going, how do you have a giant stadium and like not do anything to take care of it? And like the A's have put in scoreboards and like that sort of thing. But I mean, kind of looking around, it's just like, why would you not like try to do something? Even like the Angels, they took an old football stadium and made it into a baseball park. It's not the best in baseball, but it's definitely a lot nicer than some of the other ones. And then you have like the newer ones like Petco in San Diego, and one of my favorites in San Francisco, AT&T Park, which is right on the bay there. Very cold, though. It's deceptively cold, but it's a lot of fun.
Northern California. I think people forget how North California can get, because we always hear about LA and Southern California, how warm it is. But the people who own stadiums in California just take advantage of it. They're like, the weather's always so nice, so why do we need a nice stadium?
Yeah.
Like, that's part of the factor, you know? And maybe the Dodger Stadium, they're just like, there's so much history here and everything, you know, we don't want to tear it down. And it's like, yeah, but you can at least like renovate it, fix it up like they do with like Wrigley Field or Fenway even. Yeah, they added the seats on top of the Monster. I've been to Fenway a lot, and Fenway is very nice.
Fenway is probably my favorite overall, not just because of the stadium, because of just going to Boston.
Oh, everything around it, the whole block.
Yeah. It's so much fun. Like, if you haven't done it, I'd highly suggest it.
I've been there multiple times because my dad is a Red Sox fan. So the Viking schedule came out last week. I don't know if you got a chance to really look at it. I'm guessing you did, since you cover the Vikings as well. What were some of your thoughts on there? Is there any game or games that stood out to you as like, ooh, that one's going to be tough, or a tough stretch maybe that you noticed in their schedule? What were some of your takeaways from the Vikings schedule this year?
So like the first takeaway that I had was the beginning of the season, and we're going to learn a lot about this new look Viking defense. Mm-hmm. You go to Cincinnati, and I know Joe Burrow's coming off a torn ACL, but he's also got an offensive line that was 30th in the NFL and Pro Football Focus's offensive line rankings. If the Vikings can't get pressure on him, there are a lot of ways for Joe Burrow to hurt you, because you got Joe Mixon in the backfield. You got Jamar Chase, who's a stud. Yep. Tyler Boyd and T. Higgins are pretty good receivers on the outside. You have a lot of ways they can hurt you. And then you go to Arizona, where you're going up against that air raid offense. This team wasn't very good in the secondary. They have a lot of new pieces there. I want to see how they do that. The first game in over a year with fans at US Bank Stadium is going to be Seattle, which is awesome. It is a 3:25 start.
That's so loud.
Fans are going to be lubed up and ready to go for that one. Probably me included. That is going to be a very good one. And then the fourth game, they play Stefanski at home. They play Cleveland. Mm-hmm. And the Viking run defense was not good last year. I know they added Dalvin Tomlinson. They're going to get Michael Pierce, which is like a free agent acquisition in its own right. But they love to run the ball. Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt, they were one of the top rushing offenses, I think third in the NFL last year. So those four games, we're going to have a great idea of how this Viking defense is going to look. And then after the bye, you get the Halloween home game against Dallas, which is really interesting to me, considering how they let last year slip away. And all the weird stuff that went on with that. You had the helmet-to-helmet hit that didn't get reversed.
You had like the Chris Boyd false start or whatever. Or the illegal man down.
Yeah, the business decision by Chris Jones. Mike McCarthy smashing watermelons with a sledgehammer the night before.
Yeah.
Like, just a lot of weird things. And then what it does is it leads off to their toughest stretch of the season, where you have to go to Baltimore.
Four out of five games are on the road.
Yep, go to Baltimore, go to Los Angeles to play the Chargers. You come home to play Green Bay, who still might have Aaron Rodgers as their quarterback. I'm not celebrating yet. And then you go back out west to go play San Francisco, who will be significantly healthier than they were last year. And then you finish off with a whole bunch of divisional games at the end.
Yep.
It's not a, oh my God, this is so hard schedule. I actually went through it, and people who have heard me on this podcast before knows I am not the most positive Vikings person ever. I had them listed about 11 or 12 wins.
That's what I got them in. I did the predictions, the way too early predictions. I think I went 11 and 6. That's what it comes out to now with the 17.
I think they start really hot.
Yeah.
I really so do.
I think
they're better than
like,
the teams they're going to play.
Yeah, like 6-1 or 5-1 or something like that. You mentioned you mentioned the Bengals. 9-1. Yeah. Oh, boy. You mentioned the Bengals being able to protect Joe Burrow. Well, they have Riley Reiff now, so they should be good. They should be able to protect him.
Against our defensive line, I wouldn't doubt it. I mean,
yeah, I mean, what they should do, what the Vikings should do, is put Danielle Hunter in front of Riley Reiff and be like, "All right, see what you can do, because we've seen you in practice before, and we know you can't stop him. So good luck."
And what is happening with Danielle Hunter?
That's true too. Yeah,
we don't know. If they trot out the same defensive line that they had last year, even if they do have their wall of beef in the middle,
well,
like I
mean, he doesn't make that
the edge rushers. Steven Ann Weatherly doesn't do anything for me. DJ Wonnum, people love him, but if he doesn't sack Aaron Rodgers, are we even like excited about him?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. I'm very skeptical about this. And then you have your slew of pet cats. I guess that was the one thing with the Darisaw pick. It's like, you know, maybe you stay at 14, you get Quiddy Pay, you get Jalen Phillips. I know the trade down got you Wyatt Davis, and Kellen Mond, which I'm still.
And they got Patrick Jones in the third round too.
Yeah, I mean, it was a solid trade, but I don't know. Like, those edge rushers, man, it needs immediate help, and I don't see it.
I think the last time the Vikings drafted an edge rusher in the first round was like 95 or 96. It was like Derek Alexander.
It was Erasmus James in 2005.
Oh, yeah, yeah, you're right. But before, yeah, even before that, it was like, I guess it was, what's his face that didn't go to camp? Michigan State.
Demetrius Underwood?
Yeah.
Went to go find Jesus and never came back.
Yeah, well, he played for the Dolphins and Cowboys for a little bit. Yeah.
Erasmus James, though, I got a story my buddy told me.
Did he play at all?
He did play. He was not very good, so you probably wouldn't have remembered.
Was that Williamson's year too?
Yes. They took Williamson at 7 and Erasmus James at 19.
What a class.
They passed on Aaron Rodgers twice. Yeah, okay. Yeah. With the MVP Dante Culpepper. But no, James, a friend of mine actually told me this story, and I might be forgetting the story a little bit, but he recalled that back in 2000, whenever James got cut, that day he went out to the club. So he was at the bar having a couple beers, and all of a sudden the DJ gets over to the speaker, and it's like, you know, one of those big spotlight things or whatever. And like, they have Erasmus James just tanked, and he's just like, "Yeah, who want to go home with the Minnesota Viking?" And he's like,
"Oh,
and he had just gotten cut. But I mean, if you're going to use that card for one more day, that's a good situation to use it when you think about it.
He's not the one who got cancer or was that?
That was Kenechi Udeza.
Yeah. That was
another guy I liked coming out of college.
Yeah.
But,
right. All right. Yeah. I'll get you out of here with this. So former Minnesota Timberwolves great Kevin Garnett was inducted into the Pro Basketball Hall of Fame this weekend, along with Kobe Bryant and Tim Duncan. All those guys made me feel extremely old by going in the Hall of Fame, by the way. These are the guys I grew up watching. So is Garnett the greatest Minnesota professional athlete of your lifetime?
I was going to say yes, and then I started thinking about Randy Moss.
Yeah.
But Garnett was there longer, and I think he had more of an impact. So, like, I say it's between Moss and Garnett.
Yep.
Like, some people will say Joe Mauer because he's one of us, but I mean.
When were you born?
1986.
86, so Kirby Puckett could be in there too, right?
Yes, but I was a little too young. Like, people are like, "Oh yeah, you've seen two championships, you know, 1991. I'm like, "Nah, man, I was watching
Ninja
Rugrats or some shit." You know? Oh, sorry. I mean, I was watching Rugrats or whatever.
Yeah.
So I mean, like KG and, you know, Randy Moss were like my two favorite athletes growing up. I mean, I think KG means more to Minnesota basketball than Randy Moss means to Vikings football, because I think Moss kind of pulled everybody in after, you know, kind of a mediocre stretch in the 90s. You know, you had Red McCombs spouting off Purple Pride, but it was not Red McCombs. It was Randy Moss. And obviously, everybody listening to this podcast knows that Moss just brought a certain kind of excitement. I think his play actually eventually helped them not move this team to LA and kind of get the fan base rallied around it. But I mean, with Kevin Garnett, I mean, the Timberwolves have had absolutely nothing. And I mean, like, people can scream Carl Anthony Towns all they want, but Kevin Garnett is the Minnesota Timberwolves player that you think about. And I know he got traded to Boston. He wound up winning his title there. I know he's had a little bit of fallout with ownership. I read something this morning that A-Rod's trying to get him into the investment group now. It's a very good idea. I really think that Kevin Garnett is probably the most influential, because I played basketball because of KG. Yeah. I think a lot of other kids did too. I went to Timberwolves playoff games with my dad. That shows you how old I am. I guess I already said my date of birth, but Kevin Garnett, it's almost like 1A and 1B. It's totally tough, but yeah, Kevin Garnett definitely has a soft spot in my heart.
No mention of Adrian Peterson, which is fine, because I don't think he had as much of an impact as either of those two guys. He had a great bunch of years, obviously the MVP season, but like you said, the impact that those two guys had on the entire city of, you know, Minneapolis and state of Minnesota, I think is much larger than what Adrian Peterson was able to do.
You're forgetting the big one though. Kirill Kaprizov, who faces off already in about an hour. Oh yeah. Oh God, he is a god over here. Like, nobody's even seen him play, but like everybody, like they're ready to build a statue of him.
When did the Stars move?
The Excel. They moved in 1992, 93. Okay,
so Madonna could be in there, you know?
Madonna was only there for a couple years though.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Kaprizov, I've written about this sorry to plug other websites, but I mean, I wrote this about this at Bring Me the News. His rookie season is on par with like North Stars greats. Like, we think of Marion Gaborik, but you got Mike Madonna, Neil Broughton.
Yeah.
There's another big name I'm forgetting in there.
Wayne Gretzky.
But he did not play for the Wild. I can confirm that. Or I mean, the North Stars. But yeah, I mean, Kaprizov's doing something special right now, and I think that's why the state is very excited about where the Wild could go in the playoffs.
Well, it is a hockey state. I think the Vikings are probably the most popular.
It is the state of hockey. State of hockey. Get it right, Adam.
I'm sorry. I think the Vikings are probably still the most popular professional team. But, you know, if the Wild get up and going, they could easily take that title. A couple good years, good playoff runs with that young guy they got. You know, they got Justin Jefferson, Anthony Edwards. I'm not even going to try and pronounce the guy from the Wild that you keep mentioning, because I just don't want to mess it up.
Gorilla the Thrill, that's all you need to know.
There we go. But that's gonna do it for us today. Where can people follow you on Twitter, Chris?
I am at The Real Krishad, and I also have the Homer Horn podcast page, which I'm still trying to like motivate myself to do other fun things over at that account. So if you follow one, follow The Real Krishad, and you'll know what's up.
You also write for what, Zone Coverage and Bring Me the News?
Zone Coverage, Bring Me the News, and of course, every once in a while, I'll dabble at the Vikings Age. I'm really sorry. I will write something soon for you.
Don't worry about it.
We'll figure it out.
Life gets busy, so I'm not worried about it. But make sure to follow the Viking Age on Twitter and Facebook. Subscribe to this podcast on the Apple Podcast app, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. But until next time, we will talk to you later.